Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. Dr. Corey Rice and his team of providers treat all forms of autoimmune disease, thyroid and hormone issues, diabetes, cardiometabolic syndrome and cancers with LDN. He is a practicing internist whose practice emphasis is on functional and lifestyle medicine. Visit mymodernmedicine.com. Today I'm joined by Dr. Corey Rice, who is a DO. Thank you for joining me today, Corey.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I have been looking at your website, and we had the introduction there, and it's a very comprehensive website. In fact, it's one of the best I've seen. It tells the patient absolutely everything. And I do like the fact you have patient reviews, and that's always taking life into your own hands, because some people can just say nasty things and it's not face-to-face and they're happy. But you have some amazing reviews on there. You have one review which says, Dr. Rice, Ashley and Shannon have given me my life back. I feel better than I have in years and maybe ever. And thank you from the bottom of my heart, Dr. Rice, for your compassion and commitment to quality and to me. Reviews like that are just amazing, aren't they?
They are, and we're very fortunate to have a great patient base that's really committed to themselves and, you know, joined with us to partner with them on their journey to health.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you specialize in functional and lifestyle medicine. Now, we know traditionally many doctors treat the symptoms. So whatever symptom you have and you go to the doctors and it's a case of, okay, let's give you something to combat insomnia or spasms or whatever it may be, rather than looking at, well, let's find out why you're having these symptoms. Now, this is what functional medicine's all about, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's an important thing to know as the listener of this, to just give me a minute to explain kind of how I got here. I think we all have our story, and I think it's important, certainly when I'm doing talks to physicians and to patients and just to groups, that they know who's speaking to them. And so, yes, you can find out on our website some information, but just hearing it straight from me, I think, is important as well. So if you'll indulge me for 1 minute, you said I was a DO, and I absolutely am a DO. I went to an MD allopathic residency, and I joke, but I'm serious when I say I sort of had some of my humanity washed out of me. Over the course of those 3 to 4 years, I finished my chief resident year in internal medicine and really came out with a prescription pad ablazing and could tackle any disease with any drug and felt like I knew what I was doing. At the exact same time, I was staring in the mirror every day at a patient. So I myself was a patient. I was on 6 prescription pills. I was not healthy. And I ultimately needed to change my direction. And so personally, I did some advanced testing, both from a cardiovascular standpoint, genetic standpoint, and started learning other things about health and disease that I hadn't learned in formal training. And ultimately, I was able to, you know, reverse a lot of my issues from a cardiovascular standpoint, an insulin perspective, certainly my waistline, and all of these risk factors. And, you know, one by one, I was able to come off of medication. And I've been off medication for probably 7-8 years now. And that particular journey that I took, for took me about 6 months to go through everything I did, from diet, lifestyle, and just changing the way I looked at things, I really brought that back to our practice at that time and tried to apply what I learned myself to patient care. And that led me to functional medicine and really the idea of going after the root cause of disease. And when you learn as a physician, this sounds very crazy to say it, but when you learn as a physician that patients are not deficient – in statin therapy or antidepressant therapy or proton pump inhibitors or stomach medicines, right? And they're actually deficient in other things, and including, right, nutrient-dense food and supplements and hormones and thyroid and all the things that I do now, it becomes very, very clear that, you know, a lot of our disease is completely reversible and curable if you take these little steps and these little layers to create, you know, effective, sustainable change in these patients. And that's exactly what I did. And so we converted our practice over time from a traditional insurance practice into now two practices that focuses solely on lifestyle management as well as functional medicine, which has been just an enormous blessing for me personally and then now our team of providers.
Mm-hmm. So when a patient comes to you with a multitude of different symptoms saying, you know, I don't feel well, I'm very tired, I'm not sleeping properly, et cetera, where do you start? How do you, what's the starting point with a typical patient who doesn't really know what's wrong with them? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sure. Great question. So the most important thing to me or any provider that works with me at our practice is what's important to the patient. So the high-level testing we do, both from a serum perspective or a gut analysis perspective or saliva perspective, the data is really there to confirm our clinical hypothesis based upon our interview with the patient, right? So literally every single person I ever sit down with, I ask them, what is important to you? Because I don't have a clinical agenda. Though I'm going to get all this data, I don't care about the data if it's not what's important to you and what your health goals are. And so when they sit down with me and they tell me, my goals are to be around for my grandkids. My goals are to be more engaged in my life. My goals are to not take medication. I like to hear that because that's the framework around everything that we do moving forward. Because if I just focus on advanced testing and, you know, looking at stool analysis and get lost in the minutia of the clinical data, you lose the patient. And so as long as I can, and our team of providers keeps their eye on what the patient wants, and we marry that with the diagnostics we do, then we win every single time. And so to answer your question more directly, when they come in, we ask them what their goals are. We go through their entire history from early to old, and then we find out, you know, what have they dealt with and where are they now? And ultimately, everyone comes in on a different health continuum and a different level of disease or not disease. A lot of people are healthy that come here. A lot of people are sick that come here. And so we like to joke that for a lot of patients, we're a resort doctor because we're the last resort. And so depending on what it is they're wanting, we'll decide on the diagnostics we do. And the rubber meets the road, at least at our clinic or network of clinics, when they come in for their second, what I call their second date with us, because we have all the clinical data, we have their goals, and now we're ready to put action steps in place. And so depending on where they are and what they want, they'll have a myriad of options. But I can tell you there's not one patient who has left our practice that hasn't felt better. And that's on less medicine or sometimes no medicine. And so depending on where we are, we see every autoimmune disease you can possibly imagine. We certainly see cardiometabolic disease, which is what every physician sees in outpatient medicine. And so depending on where they are, that all starts with their goals, and then we align the diagnostics with those and we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Just a question that has suddenly occurred to me. When we are born, are we more prone to get conditions that our ancestors had? I mean, is it laid out for us right from word go, some of the things that might trip us up later in life? Or does everybody have a clean slate and circumstances throughout your life map where you're going to go? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I do. Also a very good question. So ultimately, the answer to your question is yes. We all are given a unique set of genetics and what I would call, you know, when I look at this like conceptually, I look at every person internally sort of having this, I'll just use for better, since I don't have a better illustration, a gun. And if you put in that gun certain genetic predisposition or genetic markers. Let's use, for example, if you're positive for something called apolipoprotein E or MTHFR or all of these sort of genetic sort of polymorphisms that we test, then absolutely that gun becomes more loaded. However, What pulls the trigger of that gun to create havoc is the environment and your choices throughout your life. And so, yes, your gun may be more loaded, more destructive than someone else's gun. However, the trigger that's pulled is your choices every single day with your fork and knife, with your stress, with the people that surround you, with how you sleep, with how you sweat. All of those modifiable, controllable parameters are the things that lead to whether that trigger is pulled or not. So I do believe that we all have this sort of preset risk pattern, but we can absolutely mitigate that 100,000% because I'm a living, breathing example of that. I have horrible, horrible genetics and cardiovascular disease all throughout my family. And I can modify those risk factors aggressively through my choices every day.
Well, that's answered my question. That was exactly what I was asking. But it's amazing, isn't it? If we were aware when we were younger of the pitfalls that may happen later in life and take action before it happens is so much better than trying to rectify it once that trigger's already been pulled.
You're so right. And this is something I discuss every day with patients. The unfortunate reality in physicians, and I'm sure I have some like-minded people that may hear this, and certainly you interview like-minded people like me, but they understand this comment when I make it. You know, oftentimes preventive medicine and the type of medicine we do is not the most sexy of medicines because really, and certainly in the United States or in Western healthcare, you know, when a cardiologist comes in, throws a stent in and saves your life, you know, they're sort of hailed as this hero. Rightfully so, they saved their life. But at the end of the day, if you can have a provider that is giving you incremental advice, right? So I'll give you a great example. If I've got an autoimmune patient and I say, you know what, your immune system's dysfunction. If there's no function to your immune system, how do we repair that function? Well, let's look at your gut. So we do a stool analysis and we see there's all sorts of dysbiosis or at least disruption in the environment of their gut. And I say, okay, so we're going to fix that. But also your D3, right? Your vitamin D3 level is low. Let's fix that. Oh, and you have this condition. Let's say lupus. Let's say rheumatoid arthritis. Let's talk about a medication called low-dose naltrexone. Oh, wait, let's see. Your hormones are off. Well, when you don't have hormones, we can't lubricate the joints and you're going to hurt all the time. Your thyroid's off. And so what I like to tell people now, we're creating kind of these, oh, pockets of troops, right? So like these foot soldiers where they're trying to fend off this immune onslaught that we're seeing every day from bad air, bad food, bad water, bad toxic people. I mean, you name it, it's out there. And so when you're constantly on onslaught with these bad guys, and you're constantly trying to prevent against that, we as physicians have several layers or several ways that we can set up our ground forces, so to speak, to prevent, you know, that from becoming a full out disease process, or in this sort of characterization, I guess, war. And we do that. Not each one of those is very important. And there is this additive cumulative effect that just by doing one of those things, you're not going to see much progress. But by adding them together, that's where you really resolve disease and you prevent cancer and you get rid of autoimmunity. And all of those things is you have to incrementally add different levels of protection so that patients don't feel those. And so, you know, the unfortunate thing is we don't have, you know, throughout our life trajectory as humans, you know, on our left shoulder and our right shoulder, we don't have an angel and then, you know, a devil, I guess, on the other side. We don't have these to show us where we're going in the event we don't take this preventive or this functional doctor's advice, because we just don't have that. So you have to put your faith as a patient and a consumer in who you're partnering with and just trust that what they're doing is going to effectively do what they're claiming it will.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be amazing to take young adults and give them all the tests when they're, say, 20 and say, okay, this is what could potentially happen if you carry on as you are. You need to tweak this, this, and this. It would save a fortune and save people feeling so absolutely awful, wouldn't it?
It'd be wonderful. And it's the same idea. I mean, I'm a younger physician. I'm not seasoned, as I would call, but I've seen a number of patients over the last 10 years, and there are certain patterns to certain medical conditions or disease processes that now it's a pretty cool thing because I can see the early signs in mm-hmm. certain younger patients of things that they're headed for in the more seasoned patients that I've seen. And I can tell them, you know what? I've seen your version 15 years from now. I'm treating your version in room two, I promise you. They have the same set of genetic circumstances. They have the same set of inflammatory markers. They have the same set of this, this, and this. And I can see where you're headed. So mm. it's your choice to change that trajectory or not. So that's kind of a cool deal nowadays. Mm.
Yes. I mean, I find it really upsetting. I do hear nice stories, the same as you had there, patient reviews. You know, LDN has given my life back. You know, I feel I've been given a second chance, all this kind of thing. But I also hear from people who say, I woke up this morning, I prayed I wasn't going to wake up, I feel so ill. And that is just heartbreaking. You know, if we could prevent people from ever feeling that ill, that would just be amazing. But I can't see how that would ever come about. But it would be a nice dream, wouldn't it?
Really? Oh, it certainly would. It certainly would. I think our population is lacking the want to anymore, to really want to do a lot. And we hear time and time again, these words, these aren't Dr. Rice's words. These are patients' words. But they're telling me consistently, I want to feel more engaged in my life. I feel like I'm just going through life, not living my life, right? And, you know, our country has done an okay job, I guess, of keeping people alive longer. However, we're just not feeling good. So when disability sets in at 45 or 50, that lifeline of 30 to 40 years of disability towards the end of life is just, that's just not acceptable.
Mm-hmm. But if we can slowly, gradually reverse some of these conditions give people a better quality of life. I mean, I was absolutely amazed. I became a type 2 diabetic. I have MS and I'd been given 3 courses of intravenous steroids and I blew up like a balloon. I was huge. I'd gained 6 stone, 6 times 14. That's how many pounds. It's scary. I was just huge. I had to send my husband out to buy like a dress, like a tent, because none of my clothes did up by about 6 inches. So I could go out to buy some clothes because I didn't know what size I was. Just anyway, I became a type 2 diabetic. which horrified me, and my grandmother died of diabetes back in 1960-ish when they didn't really know that much about diabetics. She went into a diabetic coma. And there was all this sort of diabetes thing in the background, and it's just like, oh, I really don't need this. Both my parents were diabetics too.
Sure.
But I have changed my diet. I lost the weight I put on. Not all of it, I must say, but I have lost most of it. And look after myself better than I did. And I'm now classed as a diabetic in remission. So
gotcha.
I'm really pleased. So
congratulations.
Thank you. I was really pleased with that box I could, you know, tick best I can. I mean, it still shows I'm pre-diabetic, but hey,
that's
absolutely fine with me.
That's better. Yeah.
It is a lot better. Yeah. And I can remember when I was 32, I had cervical cancer. I was diagnosed with MS when I was 44. I was diagnosed after my mother had a massive heart attack with hereditary high cholesterol. And then this diabetes. And my 15-year-old at that time said, you do realise, Mum, I could have all of these things as well. You know, what does life hold for me? And it was, I didn't know about functional medicine, everything at the time.
Sure.
And I was thinking, well, I don't know. You don't say that, but it was like, oh, really? I hadn't thought of
that. Yeah, what do I say?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I did want to try and stop taking my statin, and it just kept going so ridiculously high. I was at risk of having a heart attack or a stroke. It was that high. Mm-hmm. And the doctor consultant I saw, can't remember what type of consultant. Anyway, she said to me that if I lived on a lettuce leaf and a glass of water, and if that's all I ate, I would still have high cholesterol. So I've got to take the pills. She said it's hereditary, you know, and I got it from my mother and my grandfather had it, apparently. Mm-hmm. So I've had to accept, because I don't like taking medicine either. I would rather do it naturally. but I think sometimes you just have to bite the bullet.
Yeah, there is some medication, certainly without medication, and I don't want the listener to think I'm anti-medicine. Without certain medicines, we wouldn't be alive today. But I don't think it's a far stretch for me to tell anyone, really, that certainly our world and certainly in the United States, we are run on pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. And there's just too much of that going on. And so there's a huge need that needs to be fulfilled to help people get off of these. You know, statin therapy is one of those that is pretty controversial anywhere you look, really. You know, everybody's got an opinion. And so my particular opinion, because I speak on statins and advanced lipids and all of that, you know, I'm not a large proponent or advocate of females being on statins. I think if you are on a statin as a woman, I still only want it. It's really more for inflammation protection, but I'll put them on there intermittently, so like 3 days a week, and then obviously give them high-dose CoQ10. And there's a cardiologist that I learned a lot from as far as primary prevention of heart disease, and he was the one that told me, you know, anytime you've got a woman and she's on a statin, make her take it Monday, Wednesday, Friday, because she gets the same benefit as week as daily. And he said, you know, no drug company will design a study to show that you need to take their medicine less. It's always going to be to take it daily and more. So, but he said, based upon all of his years of treating heart disease, he sees no change in someone who takes it every other day versus daily. There's a wonderful, wonderful integrative interventional cardiologist, Mimi Guarneri, very well known. She's the president of the American Board of Holistic Medicine, and as I said, she's a conventional interventional cardiologist, and there's a lot of good videos on her discussing statin therapy in ladies. And really, there's no study or clinical design that's ever been done that's shown statins help to do anything to primarily prevent heart disease, strokes, or anything in a female. I get the idea of doing it for an anti-inflammatory, but you just have to be very careful of what it's doing to the mitochondria long term. And so, you know, that's just my anecdote and kind of my opinion, but and I manage a lot of these similar things, but you know, I would just proceed with caution, I think, as a woman on statins.
So. Well, I've been taking it for 18 years, so maybe I will try taking it Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That would be good. Also, I used to take an antacid because I have acid reflux.
Uh-huh.
But I've managed to cut that out as well with changing my diet. I don't get
Excellent. An
acid stomach. And it's the gluten. If I have something, if I go into a restaurant and I say, whatever dish it is, could you check that there is no gluten in there? And they'll say, come back and say, yes, the chef said there's no gluten. Once I get to bed and the pains in my stomach and the burning in the back of my throat, and I know that there was gluten in it because that's the only reason. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's annoying when that happens. But if I do manage to cut gluten out completely, the acid problem is gone. It's been eliminated.
Wonderful. It's nice when our bodies talk to us, right?
It is, isn't it? And it's listening to your body, and that
is
difficult. I mean, I've stopped taking the metformin for the diabetes. I've stopped taking this antacid tablet. I take LDN and the statin, which I'm now going to try taking three times a week. But I'm not taking anything else, and I don't ever take painkillers. When I was in a lot of pain, it was a trade-off. I could either take the pain medication, which then created such bad nausea that I just felt I was going to vomit just by lifting my head up, turning my head. But sometimes it was a case of, I can't stand the pain, I'll take the tablets. And then after I'd taken the tablets, I wished I hadn't, because the nausea was so bad. So I just gave up with tablets. But that was before LDN. And touch wood, I don't have those pains anymore.
Sure,
so that's
really
good.
Yeah.
So what would you say... I know everybody's different and you can't put everybody in the same pigeonhole, but your patients that take LDN, do they still take, you know, a vast array of medications, or have they managed to decrease the number?
Yeah, so I can't say there's a pattern there across the board. I'd say more so than not, they're certainly on less medication. LDN has been just a fabulous introduction to what we do, and I just can't say it enough. Our best cases of complete remission, whether that's multiple sclerosis, as you said, whether that's colitis of any variety, certain skin conditions or Hashimoto's, I mean, all of it, complete remission of those conditions across the board happens when the patient is, yes, taking LDN. However, when they're looking at the different other segments of their life and, quite frankly, their immune function, and you know, committing themselves to a healthier way and a healthier decision process, those are the ones that do very, very well. And so if I've got someone who comes in with whatever, cardiometabolic disease, depressed, on an antacid or proton pump inhibitor, and, you know, we end up making some lifestyle decisions and showing them their genetics and immune function and da-da-da, and they end up no longer having those issues. Certainly they come off the medications associated with that issue. But oftentimes if you can just heal someone's gut, you know, you can help kind of their whole situation. And so, you know, I treat a lot of thyroid disease, lots of thyroid disease. That's a big one for me. It's a personal, professional passion because it's just so mismanaged and misunderstood in this country and in the world, I think. And so thyroid is the perfect example. That gland, you know, controls so many different functions in the body. And if you're not optimizing it and optimizing the levels of thyroid in the body, then you really are missing the boat on several things. And there's very clear defined reasons now why our thyroid gets dysfunctional. And it just, you know, from a diagnostics perspective and a treatment perspective, 95% of formal physicians on the planet are just not, they're kind of going with what I used to do, which is through what I was taught in training, and they're not really looking at how it functions. But when you repair immune function, you know, the LDN is wonderful at helping clear out some of those antibodies so that their thyroid functions better. And so I don't think I ever take anyone off LDN. I kind of make my exception with low-dose naltrexone because I tell patients every day, you're not deficient in this, you're not deficient in that, you're not deficient in statins, you're not deficient in, you know, metformin, you're not deficient in this. So let's fix those. Let's show you what you are deficient in. But it also goes against my mantra. You know, I do want you to think about taking this medication because we just live in a very toxic planet, and it's giving you a little more protection to deal with the onslaught of those toxins. But you're not deficient in LDN. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my whole thing with that.
Mm. And I mean, our food isn't the quality it used to be years ago either, is it?
Mm-hmm. No, it isn't. No, our soil isn't. Certainly not. Our water, our people aren't. I mean, I feel like you can talk about anything, and there's just toxins every single place, right? So you combine onto that with the inability to detox through the liver, and you have genetic predispositions for that, and it's just a perfect storm to develop an autoimmune disease or, you know, or cardiovascular disease or cancer. I mean, you name it. It's just it's a war out there. And and physicians, I feel like as a physician, we just have to be smarter than what we learned in formal training. We have to, you know, there's just more to it than that.
What kind of a diet would you say is a healthy diet? What should we be looking to eliminate?
Yeah. So broad question. So yeah, diet, you know, I'll use the term menu plan. So what type of way of life or menu? Diet has such a negative connotation to it, unfortunately, because the word diet was not meant to be a negative thing. However, from a menu perspective, it really depends on you as a patient, right? So I don't think there's any one size that fits everyone. There's a rage now among some of our patients that get fantastic results from eating ketogenic and living that life. There are patients that can't tolerate keto. There are patients that are strictly paleo. There are patients that are pescatarian, vegetarian, vegan, you name it. And so I am here. There is no one size fits all. I mean, I know how I eat and what I do, but that's based upon my genetics and what's worked for me to fix some of my biomarkers and just help me get off medicines and feel great. But what works for me doesn't always work for everyone else. And so the best way to answer that question is for patients to have a concrete idea of what their biomarkers look like and their genetics look like. What does your risk pattern look like? I want to know all of it, from the genetics to, you know, what is your blood type, right? What, because I've seen patterns among different populations of patients on how they can eat and what they tolerate and what they don't. For example, I tried keto. I don't do well with keto at all. But keto has been a wonderful addition for some patients, certain, particularly women, that can't lose weight doing anything. They go on to ketogenic, pure ketogenic diet, and they're measuring their ketones and such, and they are finally losing fat. And I think it's breaking kind of that leptin resistance cycle they have. But you know, there's just no perfect answer for our diabetics or cardiometabolic disease. I'm still very, very hardcore about the Mediterranean food plan. So eating a Mediterranean diet modified down to reduce the gluten and dairy content is still highly, highly successful and studied and published on reversing cardiometabolic disease and diabetes specifically. So it really depends on that risk pattern. If you have an autoimmune patient, right, there's an autoimmune protocol that we follow that works very nicely. And that's just removing all the inflammatory foods and just increasing the nutrient density of what you're eating. And it's really not that complicated, I think, from the provider perspective, because it's very much similar to some of these other things we do. But if you've got someone with gut dysfunction and intestinal candidiasis or small intestinal bowel overgrowth, I mean, we've got different, you know, ways of eating to kind of fix those conditions. So it truly is individualized. I think that's just good medicine to look at it that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for patients out there who are listening, you're in Texas. You have two offices.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you tell people how they could contact you? Where do they have to go?
Absolutely. So first thing is, if you want to hear more about kind of what we're about, go to our website. It's www.mymodernmedicine.com. There are two locations, one in the center of Dallas in Addison, and on our website there's a phone number and address for that, and then we've got another location about 20 to 25 miles east of that location that they can also sort of search for and find. I'll also be starting, I hope soon, to be publishing more podcast YouTube stuff, because I've had a lot of requests for that. I've just got a lot of information I'd like to disseminate to my patient base and just to people that want to follow, whether they're patients or not. And so I'm hopeful that I can get that going soon as well. But there's enough, I think, content on the web that they should be able to at least locate us and find out more about us.
Mm-hmm. And what about waiting lists? How long would a patient have to wait to see you or one of your partners?
You know, it's not as bad as I think some other clinics. And so, you know, right, you know, and this is, I think, why that is. Our whole model, this is, sounds kind of crazy, but our whole model is predicated on getting you well. The disease model in America certainly is not predicated on wellness. It's predicated on keeping you to pay in and buy into it. And so the only way a doctor like me thrives and our business thrives and we're able to grow other clinics is to get new influx of patients in. Well, how do we do that? You just build that through word of mouth. Like, we literally have not spent $1 in marketing ever since I've owned this. And it's all word of mouth is how we've been able to build another office. And so the wait list, with that sort of foundation said, isn't bad. I mean, it's probably, I don't know, 4 weeks or so maybe to get in to see me as a new patient. And then one of our providers can maybe see you a little sooner, but it's not too terrible. There's a lot that goes into the first two visits. Like anything else in the functional medicine world, you just have a lot of, it's just an overwhelming experience, I think. But there's a lot that you learn, and you're ready. I think you're empowered with knowledge once you leave after that second visit. So, the wait, I wouldn't let that bother, but I think I would, you know, whoever may be listening to this, if they're even remotely close to where we are, they could call one of the offices and get a pretty good idea, but it's not bad.
Mm-hmm. And what about telephone consultations? Would you do that after Absolutely. Those initial two? You do telephone. Okay.
I do. And that's been something new for the last, new as in the last 1 to 2 years. This whole idea, because patients move, people learn about you. I speak for a number of organizations, and it's just by doing this, you travel all over and you meet all sorts of people. And they want you to help them. And so they don't have to be, you know, right down the street from you. And so, yes, I absolutely do that. And we do have means at times to set up like mobile phlebotomy work so that you can, we can actually, through our vendors who get our lab testing, can go and meet you at your work or home to draw the lab. So there's no like additional cost there. And so there are ways of doing that. I'm no longer an insurance physician. I used to be, but I'm no longer now. And there's a lot of political reasons as to why that it just wasn't a sustainable model. And I'm sure people probably understand that. The insurance system is not built on getting you well. It's on getting your money. So they just did not want to compensate or pay for someone like me. They didn't want me out there conquering all this disease. But, you know, that's
amazing.
The truth.
But as you said at the beginning, it's a partnership, isn't it, between the patient
and
the doctor. And it's that trust, isn't it? You know, if you really gel with that doctor, you would wait the 4 weeks willingly, you know. I'm sure.
No question. Who wants to be part of a dictatorship, right? I mean, it just doesn't, especially when you're dealing with a vulnerable set of circumstances as far as disease and healthcare. So.
Well, we've come to the end of the show, and thank you so much for being with us today.
I love being here. This was awesome. So I'm available anytime you need me. This was great.
Thank you. Dr. Corey Rice and his team of providers treat all forms of autoimmune disease, thyroid and hormone issues, diabetes, cardiometabolic syndrome and cancers with LDN. He is a practicing internist whose practice emphasis is on functional and lifestyle medicine. Visit mymodernmedicine.com. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.